Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by the F1 2018 video game. This episode is called Car on Your Head. Car on Your Head. I'm your host, Richard Spannersready, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. Matt, do you have a car on your head?
No, but I do have a different set of headphones.
Yeah, and you sound different because you're joining us from holiday again. We appreciate the commitment. Matt, some people complaining it's a boring race, but we did have like a really interesting qualifying session, one of the best for a long time. And we also had a very exciting and dramatic opening. And then we kind of had, I don't know, an hour or so just to chill and watch fantastic machinery go round and round.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been interpreted as a boring race, but really a lot of interesting things happened. And frankly, it's like orange juice. Sometimes it comes squeezed into a pitcher, orange by orange, and other times you buy that tiny little block of concentrate. And that's what today was.
That analogy confuses and angers me. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're also joined by rising star journalist Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
And we're joined by chief microphone headbutter Alex Jeansy Van Jean. How's it going, Alex?
It's going really well, Spanners. I have to warn you today that I'm feeling very mischievous, so God knows what I'm going to say. And I've got a child monitor to look after, but we're all good.
Good. And looking after the chat room, we have Uncle Steve Down Under. How's it going, Steve?
It's going well, thanks, Spanners. How's everybody doing?
Awesome. Chris Stevens of Autosport and Motorsport.com sometimes. Wow, you're going places in the world. Tell us about qualifying.
Qualifying was interesting, wasn't it? Especially going into Q3, just as the rain was coming down and they're trying to go out on slicks, and a heck of a save from Valtteri Bottas at Blanchimont as well. Usually if you go off there in the rain, you end up in the barrier. So that was a nice recovery there, but it really screwed up a lot of people's plans. I mean, Mercedes, for example, Bottas was only out there to give Lewis Hamilton a slit stream on his hot lap. And as we know, some guys got their fuel wrong as well. They Kimi Raikkonen and both the Red Bulls ended up much further down the grid because they mistimed the session and expected the weather to change.
It's good that they used Bottas to give Hamilton a tow, completely putting to bed all suggestions that he's a wingman. Isn't that right, Trumpets?
Well, I think we'll have to see in Monza now, won't we? Because this is yet another racetrack where a tow can be advantageous if you get it right. And we never really found out. I mean, does Hamilton actually owe him one now? Because the tow never really happened because of the weather. What do you think, Stevens?
I don't know. I mean, usually at Monza, they sort of take it in turns between runs, don't they? So I guess we'll see how that pans out. But it's a really tricky thing to try and organize. I mean, we've seen McLaren try and do it. We've seen other teams try and do it in the past, and it just doesn't work out a lot of the time. It's a high-risk strategy.
Yeah, it is. But I think we'll see for sure what the relationship between Bottas and Bottas, sorry, chat room, Bottas and Hamilton is when we get to Monza and see if he's still slower on the straights, who sets whom up with a toe in Q3.
So then, Chris, interesting qualifying session. Is my memory serving me right that it was dry for Q1 and Q2? And then in Q3, they all went out on slicks before the weather got involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And nobody managed to get a time in before the track was too wet for slicks. I mean, the Force Indians tried, and another miraculous save, really, by Sergio Perez going up Eau Rouge.
It just shows you like how little we know from the sort of sofa and the sofa position. Like, if you were the referee, because Matt, I was there going, well, it's got to be worth at least a punt on the dry tyres. It's got to be worth a punt. It's not going to get any drier. Just go for it. And then both Force Indias nearly end up in the wall at Radeon.
Yeah, but you know what? You were right. It was worth it because they didn't refuel either. But because they ran that extra super slow lap on the slicks, they were on track when conditions were at their best. And this is when we saw both Red Bulls and Kimi not have enough fuel to take advantage.
And we saw Lewis going out there, you know, right at the end of the session as well, on track at the same time as Sebastian. So in terms of the conditions, it was quite equal between them. But it was surprising to see the gap between them. And if you actually look at the lap, it was a real to and fro between them. There were a lot of sections where Seb was actually quicker, but he had a low battery during his lap, so he didn't have all that extra electrical power to help him out.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter, I think it was Alex Gianludale retweet, I believe it was a Formula One thing where they did a side-by-side comparison of the Q3 laps. And I'll admit, I was surprised at the size of the gap, but I did read after the race that because the timing was so wonk for Ferrari, Vettel actually had showed up to that lap with a way less than full battery. And I think that probably accounted for him not making time back up in the last sector, which he had traditionally taken a lot of time out of Hamilton in.
He ran out of energy after turn one, so he did the majority of that lap without electrical power. And what is absolutely fascinating about that is if you look at the mini sectors, Sebastian was quicker out of La Source. By the end of the Kemmel Straight, Lewis was sort of marginally ahead, going quicker because he was a bit more committed through Eau Rouge. And despite lacking the electrical power, Sebastian was still quicker out of Paul Frere and through the high-speed section. So even though he didn't have all the power available to him, he was marginally quicker than Lewis.
Jeansy, then, what happened to the so-called young Dutch Rainmaster? Because, I mean, look, Lewis Hamilton, he does it. It is every single time. I'm not imagining it, am I? And Max Verstappen, he cultivated this reputation as being amazing in the rain in Brazil in that one race. But the last couple of times, where's he been?
It's interesting you say that about Lewis when it comes to the rain, because every single time we have those conditions, he always rises to the top. I said that on several different things, but I agree on Max. He's had one or two decent showings in the rain, and to be fair, the one or two decent showings he's had in the rain, he still got beat by Lewis, and everybody thinks he's this master. Yeah. But
hang on, let's get Sparkles to defend Max, because the Netherlands is our third highest audience.
Hello, Dutchies. To be fair, against, you know, trying to battle Lewis, Lewis has got a significantly better car than Max. So I don't think that comparison is entirely fair. But if we harken back to a conversation, Matt, that you and I had with Summers about why the Ferrari and the Red Bull really struggled in the soaking wet Hungarian Grand Prix qualifying, because of the rake they run on the car. They run much more rake than the Mercedes do. And overall, through technical mastery that I don't quite fully understand, but Summers does, it makes them a worse off car in the wet than the Mercedes.
Well, and here I was thinking, it's just the fact that Red Bull's getting to grips with having to be a customer team this year.
Well, also, they've been trimming the wings out as well, which I don't think helped. And Ricciardo, especially, he'd been toing and froing between a high downforce, a low downforce setup, and got no consistent running during that weekend at all.
Do we think with Ricciardo that he's not getting the full bag of toys? because ever since then, because they've already said that he's not going to be in any of the technical briefings or any of the technical meetings until he's literally just going to turn up and drive, which is what every driver wants to do. They all want to be in the technical stuff. But do you think they've taken some of his toys away as well?
I wouldn't be surprised. I know that Red Bull, well, what's funny about that actually is that Red Bull and McLaren are both running a Spec C Renault engine that Renault themselves aren't running. So there's, in a way, you gain something, you lose something, I guess.
All right, so let's move on slightly, Trumpets, because key to this battle, this championship battle between Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton this season has been increasingly the activities of their number twos and their strategies throughout the race. So we lost Bottas because of an engine penalty. So just quickly confirm to me, I think that's because he's just had too many bits now. And also, what happened to Kimi?
Well, Bottas blew up one of his engines early on in the season. So he was one off of Hamilton in terms of sequence. That's why he, when he took a fresh engine, this is a good time for them to take it. And then with regard to Kimi, Kimi actually was probably, might have beaten Vettel if he'd had full battery. Kimi, this is a track that he loves, and he had driven extremely well for all of the sessions up till then. But Ferrari, crucially, did not get enough fuel into his fuel tank when he came in to put on his wet tires, or his inters. And this capped him off the track and put him into the midfield, which, as we will see, rapidly ended his race.
Uncle Steve, you're looking after the fine chat room folks that go to YouTube and search Missed Apex Podcast. What are they up to?
Right at the moment, they're having a little bit of fun with the start of the race. But Peter Van Gans has got a question. He wants to know, is Alonso the record holder for the most numbers of the most meters airborne in an F1 car?
Well, we'll get to that.
But Ketanath Iyer comes back and says that Alonso has the record for the cumulative longest airborne at the first corner at Spa only.
Oh, well, that's as good as the Triple Crown. He doesn't need to bother anymore then, does he?
Oh, no, the chat room are well over the Triple Crown. I reckon that's last week's argument.
Sorry. Trumpets?
No, I was just going to ask before we move on if the Bottas Van Dorn incident has made it into Whose Fault Is It or not.
Oh, no, I hadn't put it in there, but we can cover it there if you'd like.
Well, you seem like you're getting itchy fingers to move on, so...
Tell me all about that incident, and he got a reprimand, right?
He did get a reprimand, and for all those people who believe the FIA exists only to benefit Ferrari, was anyone else here surprised that's all he got, given the severity of the incident?
No, because that's what we've seen. That's fairly consistent with what we've seen. They are reluctant to give out grid penalties and reluctant to give out time penalties, especially for things that don't happen in a race session. So, no, I think that's fairly consistent with the penalties they've given so far. No, yes?
Couldn't have given him a grid penalty. He was already starting at the back.
Could have given him a time penalty.
Yeah, there was nothing really else they could give him that would cause any pain this race, and they can't pass it on to the next.
Good. I tell you what we can move on to, though, is the race. I'm pointing here, assuming there'll be some amazing graphics from Steve in the final edit of the video. I'm not just pointing to their ugly, ugly faces. Matt, why don't you tell us where this race was won and lost?
Well, outside of qualifying, which we've just discussed, and where we saw Kimi crucially in the midfield along with the Red Bulls, you have to really look at the start in this race. In particular, I find that the launch phase was critical for Alonso.
Oh, wah, wah.
I am, at the end of the day, also a father. Yeah, no, really, it was a good start for Hamilton, and he squeezed Vettel to the point that after the race was over, he says, "I don't think Lewis saw me there."
Right? No, I don't know if that was sarcastic, but actually, yeah. I think Vettel had the better of Hamilton race wise, wheel to wheel today. But I was sitting there wondering what was going to happen at the first turn. What were Lewis Hamilton's options? Because I think we all universally agreed that little trick through Eau Rouge, up through Radeon, and lifting before that section wasn't going to work this time because Ferrari had more power. I was thinking that he would have to do more into turn one. And sure enough, alongside, he actually took a much wider line than was necessary. And I wondered if he was hoping that the Force Indias would then get involved and give him a bit of a buffer going through that Kemmel Strait section.
Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, he really needed the Force Indias to try and get in amongst him and try and upset him, his rhythm, and that probably would have helped him quite a lot, Matt.
Yeah, well, instead, what happened was that O'Cone, of all the starters, people at the sharp end of the grid, got the best start. And rather than trying to get in front of Vettel, he tucked in and, along with Vettel, used the slipstream to just about take the lead going into Lake Home. If he had not backed out of that, he would have left Vettel with a very unfortunate choice to make, and he might well have led at least a small part of the lap.
Lewis has done exactly what I would have done, which is he knows that Seb's going to have a run at him. So what he's wanted to do is he's wanted to angle him away to reduce his run on him down the hill. And the only way to do that is to squeeze him over to the side. If a Force India got in, that would have been wonderful. But yeah, you're right. The trick going up, lifting off the throttle that was so genius last year wasn't going to work this year, not only because of power, but Vettel would have known it was coming. So it was irrelevant. But my biggest disappointment from that whole part is it was Ocon. You know, the guy's fighting for a race seat right now. And he was halfway along up the inside of Seb. He would have actually taken him. He would already have had to do his brake at his normal braking point, and he would have been at that apex first. As far as I'm concerned, Ocon bottled it. Absolutely bottled it. And if he's doing it for himself, he'd have looked amazing, which is great for him coming into another drive, because it looks like he could potentially be out of one miraculously for some ridiculous reason. But also it would have really helped Lewis out, which is what they want to do for Mercedes.
If Ocon had jammed it up the inside there, there is a 90% chance that Vettel could have maintained the lead, or he would have just slid into him and Hamilton probably would have got collected up in that.
Chris.
Or he only would have passed Lewis, and that's just no benefit to
Chris. What are you on about? He was alongside him into a turn on the inside. He completely had that corner. What better way to show the world that you need to be desperate to sign Esteban Ocon than doing one up the inside of Sebastian Vettel into Le Com?
Do you think Vettel would have just backed straight out of it? No, yep. He would have tried to have gone around the outside of him, because then he would have had the inside for the second apex and just held on to the lead anyway.
So you're saying don't fight. You're saying if you're a young driver in third place in an F1 race, don't fight. Just go home.
In the Force India that is 1.5 to 2 seconds slower than the cars that were around him at that time, what on earth would have been the point of trying to get involved in a fight that you don't belong in? That's been Ocon's MO since he arrived in Formula One, and it served him well.
Who pays Ocon's bills?
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Who pays Ocon's bills?
Mercedes.
Mercedes pay Ocon's bills. So by Ocon getting ahead of Seb, what does that do? That stops Seb getting away from the Mercedes. That is exactly what he should have done. He was cleanly up the inside. Vettel couldn't have closed the door because Ocon was right there. So all Ocon would have done would have got through, and Seb wouldn't have closed the door.
It was just such a big chance of it going wrong.
Post race, Ocon was very clear that he was carrying too much speed to cleanly make the apex there, and that's why his breaking point was where it was.
All
but
right.
More to the point, you're going to talk about him losing a race seat. Well, we do know that he was fitted for a seat at McLaren, but I read recently on the very internets where I mostly dwell that he is not now ineligible for that seat because he is too tall. In the line that you have to draw from the roll hoop to the front of the cockpit, his head pokes into. And they're not going to redesign a whole car for him. Yeah, Chris?
I don't get about that. I can understand that for like this year's car, but they've had tall people. Like, they had Jenson Button in that car for 7 years.
They're talking about this year's car.
Right, okay.
Because if Stroll moves to Force Racing Point, Racing McRae's face, then someone's going to need to go somewhere, aren't they?
Well, yeah, so this is what we've been talking about how Ocon's going to be left out of his seat because Stroll is going to be moved into the Force India, and we think it's going to be McLaren. But I don't think McLaren are going to be too willing to shove Van Dorn out immediately. It could well be that Ocon ends up just sitting out this season and then rejoining next season, because Van Dorn won't get a seat at Sauber either, because Fred Vasseur has said point blank that nothing's going to be changing this year.
All right. No, but can we get back to talking about the race instead of the driver market? As much fun as the driver market is. Yeah, actually. So naturally, the carnage at the back mattered a bit. We lost Raikkonen. We lost Ricciardo. But it also brought out the safety car. And that not only pretty much put most people onto a one-stop strategy by the time it was in, but it gave us the excitement of a restart with Hamilton behind Vettel. And it looked like, for all the world, he was going to get a good run on him down the straight and into the first turn, except for Hamilton was so close, he actually locked it up going into the bus stop. And that created just enough gap for Vettel to just, I mean, he was gone up the hill by time anything that resembled a passing opportunity had reared its ugly head.
All right. Remind me of the rules, Chris, because I was sleeping a little bit. And when I saw Lewis Hamilton go for a move into the bus stop, I guess I'd kind of lazily got it into my head. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who made this mistake, was that you couldn't make an overtake again until the start finish line. But obviously you can.
It's the first safety car line, which at Spa is before that bus stop chicane. And I was really surprised to see him go for it, to be honest, because Lewis is a smart guy. He would have known his best shot would have been slipstreaming down Kemmel and into Les Combes. So I was quite surprised to see him try and go for something a little bit more audacious.
I think it was because Seb was a little bit slow going up the chicane, and I think Lewis just got a really good run on him. And the problem was, I think it was like a half chance, which he likes to do, and then he kind of backed out of it because he knew if he got past him there that Seb would just get him again up the hill. It was a misjudgment from Lewis.
Let's see what the chat room's up to with Uncle Steve.
The chat room are talking about the start, and Johnny's Corner makes the point that if Ocon had wiped out Seb at the beginning like you were talking about, you'd be the first lot of people to slam him for a reckless move, so you can't have it both ways.
I don't want it both ways. I want him to make the move.
Well, he didn't this time.
Okay, anything else?
Armand Erkin says, what about the great start that Perez made? No one's mentioned that at all. And that was a flyer that he made up the inside.
For all the praise and plaudits that Esteban Ocon gets, he's got a really talented teammate who is up there consistently. He's the one who picks up the podiums when they're available. Matt, I know you're an Ocon fan, but my boy Perez, he is up there fighting. And I sit here on the panel. So don't tell me we don't like Perez. I sit here, I defend Perez all the time, Matt.
You do defend Perez all the time. And from a driving point of view, he is a proper match for Ocon. I think they actually make a good pairing. He's always been excellent on tires. He's always been a quick driver. It's been, I think, his personality in his unfortunate time at McLaren more than anything else that's really just kind of, I hate to use the word tarnished, but has kind of stuck with him throughout his various race seats. But you can't argue that he took full advantage when Ocon opened the door when he tried to pass Vettel. And he stuck it there and he stayed there. And yeah, if you give him half an opportunity, he will put it on the podium if you let him, or not far away otherwise.
I think what I've noticed about Perez is if you're fighting for 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, I think Ocon will get the better half of him. The second that there is a sniff of something a bit more that puts him in a different area, like getting close to the podium, all of a sudden you see Perez come alive. You know, he outclassed Ocon today. He took advantage of the mistakes that Ocon made, not going for Seb, and then he backed completely off and lost all his positions. So, full plaudits and full praise to Perez today. He saw the opportunity for the potential podium and he went for it.
All right, Trumpets. So we've settled down a bit now, haven't we? We've settled in. The Force Indias slowly get eaten up by Max Verstappen. The two teammates are out of the fight because Kimi Raikkonen's been punted. And we'll cover, by the way, the shunt in Whose Fault Is This? Bottas is having to fight his way out the back. So we've got Lewis Hamilton chasing down Sebastian Vettel. Tell us where the race was won and lost.
Well, do you remember yesterday in the WhatsApp chat that I'm probably not supposed to reference, but I will anyway? Or was it Slack? I can't remember. In one of the chats, I said that all things being equal, the race is coming down to tire and energy management.
So much fun.
And it you got to admit that's pretty much what it was. Hamilton settled in. As they got close to the pit stops, he picked up the pace, and there was a line of blisters that appeared on his tires. Yeah,
no, that was the thing. It's interesting because we normally associate with Lewis Hamilton with getting a bit grumpy on the tires, and today he said, no, they're fine. He developed that big line, and I have to admit, yes, that tire did look bad, but he had the grip, he had the pace, he was closing it down. I'm sure Vettel was responding in some way. However, the lap time was coming down and down and down. You think, Matt, well, why didn't he just keep pushing for another couple of laps, get that down to 1.5 seconds and really go for the undercut? Because when he pitted, the undercut wasn't on. He was out of that window.
Well, he was, I think, on the right edge of it, given the length of the lap. He was right at 3 seconds, and he had brought it down by almost half a second. But what you were seeing was Vettel would respond. The difference here is Mercedes could go fast for a couple of laps, and then I think their tire temperatures would start to peak and they'd start to get the blisters. So it was only ever going to be a couple of super fast laps from Hamilton going in and coming out. And this was critical to him. And he had an excellent in lap. He had a stellar out lap. And he was, I think BBC mentioned he was close. He'd pulled back close to a second. The undercut is a second and a half. He already pulled that back halfway through the lap. And it really looked like he might be right on Vettel's tail and Vettel on cold tires when he came upon the longer running Max Verstappen in sector 3. And that just created enough of a gap for Ferrari to get in and out of the pits. And he wasn't even a second ahead of, he was like about 7 tenths ahead, I think, when he came out. But it was enough because he was, by time he got up the hill and Lewis began to reel him in, once they got to sector 3, his tires were up to temperature and he was gone. He was out of DRS by time they completed that first lap. And at that point, barring rain or a safety car or just a mechanical failure, Lewis gave it the beans for a couple of laps, but it was pretty much done. You could look at their tires when they parked. There were no blisters on his tires. He ran a couple of laps and they said, we're not going to catch him today. And everybody just drove around at a manageable pace in the top three.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So it's quite key then that Kimi Raikkonen had been taken out earlier. Bottas had not been in that fight. And what it meant was Mercedes had no tactical cards up their sleeve. So let's say that, yes, in the first stint with the Super Softs, Mercedes was able to live with and be able to kind of change their pace around the management and energy and tyre conservation enough to disrupt what Ferrari were doing and make them respond to them. So had they had Bottas there, clearly there would have been some more strategic options.
Yeah, potentially there could have been, depending upon how the start played out. But at the end of the day, I mean, in dry weather, that Ferrari was just playing faster around the track. And yes, Vettel managed it expertly. Hamilton did everything he could. It was clear from the post-race interviews. But at the end of the day, their options were limited because their car wasn't as fast. And they didn't have, like you said, neither of the second drivers were there to liven things up a bit.
All right, so let's talk about that then. Let's talk about the gap between these two cars. Everybody, the consensus across punditry and the paddocks is that Ferrari currently are turning up to races with the best package. Now, you and I have been talking at length about how you disseminate the information from free practices to try and decipher which car is going to win on Grand Prix Day, who has the faster package. And unfortunately, we were robbed of that dry Q3 because it would have been really good to see the flat out delta between the fastest Merc and the fastest Mercedes.
Yeah, it is. And you know how you're always on me that Mercedes is really the faster car and, you know, and that Ferrari is the one doing the catching up. And I'll be honest with you. It's looking at through Q2, Ferrari was ahead by, I think, 52 thousandth of a second. Q3 would have been so interesting to see if they have caught fully up with their Mercedes or not. But what was clear from the Friday, from the FP2, the practice two, was that Ferrari, and again, I think this is as much down to how they manage their tires as it is anything else. Ferrari on the medium tires, you had Vettel and Hamilton on the medium tires, and Vettel kept on turning laps in the low 48s, and Hamilton just could not keep it there. If you looked at their longer runs, and that to me told the story that Ferrari had the advantage, whether it's because they ran less downforce, whether it's because they have their trick chassis, or whether it's because they're stalling the wing, is secondary. The fact is they have a big advantage right now in the way the car runs in races.
Of course, both Mercedes and Ferrari brought significant engine upgrades, the third specification engine for this season. Ferrari have been making quite a lot of gains with the fuel, with Shell, and they say that's where a significant portion of their advantages have been made since the beginning of the turbo hybrid era. Interestingly enough, this is the first time since Spain that Raikkonen has been on engine parity with Sebastian Vettel, because since Spain and he had that turbo problem, he had to change an engine, which was the original spec. So he never got the spec B engine when Sebastian got it, and now they're both on spec C.
That is interesting. And just to clarify, I believe Ferrari has an entirely re-engineered MGU-H and turbocharger in that engine. But I had heard, I don't know if you heard this, that the fuel, the new Ferrari fuel, is so expensive that Haas actually couldn't afford to run it.
That's interesting. It really is a fascinating battle between these two teams. So, Matt, are you laughing? I was being sincere. You're rocking my world with this technical information. It's amazing. Well, but I hate to admit when you're right about eight races ago, right near the beginning of the season, what you called was that key would be how the cars interact with the tires. Well, normally we only see one set of tires for the season. This season, we managed to get a look at these super skinny tires. And if you look at how Mercedes' performance really increased when they had the tires at Paul Ricard and Silverstone, you can see that the tires are key to the performance, perhaps more than the engine and chassis.
Yeah, and I remember we were talking about the Haas cars and K-Mag demanding they get a tire engineer and how much a difference it made to them. Or even on the Carter show, do you remember him mentioning, like, being just shell-shocked when they were like, no, the big difference is when the Mercedes could sift the tires and know the best ones just for Q3. I mean, but that's where these differences, as these details, that's where they are.
All right, look, let's get onto a more shouty part of the show.
Whose fault is it?
What a shunt! What a shunt! So look, we're not quite talking Spa 98, but wow. I mean, that was at least somewhere ahead of the Grosjean shunt in its domino effect, in the fact that there was more than one incident. I mean, great that everyone's walked away. So now that we know everyone's safe, we can go, whoa. I mean, it was amazing, Matt. We had Alonso completely launch. Leclerc had a car on his head. He had a car on his head. And apart from that, we also had Bottas independently hitting a Williams, and then going through the first turn, we then had, for good measure, Ricciardo shunting into the back of Kimi Raikkonen just to take him out. Oh, you think you escaped all that carnage? Nope. Here's a front wing in your tyre, Jeansy.
But you know what's funny about every single incident that happened at that first corner? They're all slam dunks. at least in the Grosjean thing, it was like, oh, did Lewis come across all that? Every single one of these is an absolute slam dunk.
Slam dunk. I see what you did there.
So Jeansy, go on then. Let's start with, it was Hülkenberg, wasn't it, that set off the really big one. What happened to Hülkenberg?
He stamped on the brake pedal and the wheels locked. When I first saw it, it looked really weird, and I thought it could have been a brake problem or cold tires or something like that that could have caused it. That was my first impression from the first thing I saw. However, Hulk came out straight after the race and just said, sorry, hands up, misjudgment, made it all out. However, during Ted's talk in the race afterwards, all I heard him say was he forgot to put his contact lenses in. I had to rewind back, but luckily he was just taking the mic, saying he should have gone to Specsavers. But I was like, wow, that would have been amazing.
Steve, what's going on in the chat room? Because they're just as excited as we are.
There's a couple of comments about the fuel issue you were talking about, and some teams not being able to buy this new additive that apparently has gone into Shell fuels. And Rob Graham wants to know, is the Shell claim just a Shell game? Which I think is a nice line.
It's clever.
And European says, I don't think Shell would risk a technical claim that they wouldn't be able to follow up on. So he seems to think that it's all a little bit of a storm in a teacup, perhaps. EMH2212 says, if anyone told me before the race that the most exciting moment of Spa would be Ericsson versus Hartley and Lewis toweling his bottom, I'd have reached for the whiskey to prepare myself earlier.
There's a brilliant one there as well from Evangelos Etikarikos that says, it's Alonso's fault because he should have left the car's height while passing Leclerc. And that's going to be hard to beat, Sparkles.
That's spaceship racing. That's coming in like 50 years or so, isn't it? Something like that. I saw some comments on social media, and I'm seeing them in the chat room here as well, that Hülkenberg should have tried to go onto the grass, try and avoid the back of the car in front of him. Of course, the problem is, once you've locked up those brakes, you've got no control over the front of your car. You can't slow down and you can't steer. A tire's only got grip when it's rotating. So if it's locked, you can't steer. And that's why Hülkenberg wasn't able to take avoiding action.
He should have turned the brakes off and then on again. I've heard that that works. Jeansy, you were telling me that a lot of those incidents were nailed on. Why don't you just quickly take us through then? Because Bottas ended up making contact, and also Raikkonen and Ricciardo.
Yeah, so Bottas did a smaller version, basically, of what Hülkenberg did. He locked up and he went into the back of... Was it Sorokin or was it Stroll?
Sorokin.
It was Sorokin, I thought so. So he just locked up and hit the back of Sorokin.
If it was Stroll, Lawrence Stroll would have run in and said, no, you don't do that to my boy. He's a future F1 world champion. I've actually made moves to buy Formula One. Back off. So that's how we know it was Sorokin.
Because everybody thought originally that Bottas had gone into the pits just as a strategy thing to change tyres. And then it showed him take off most of his front wing. So, that was Bottas. And, Ricciardo just clouted straight into the side of Kimi. However, I think Kimi could have avoided that, could have avoided everything, if all he had done was straighten up the wheel, gone off outside the limits of the track and gone round, and he wouldn't have got collected. And he could have just put it down as avoiding action.
Sorry, but that is a bit like saying I wouldn't have been shot in the back if I had jumped out of the way of the bullet.
Yeah, that would work.
You don't know it's going to happen. So it's not like he could see it all coming. But to say on the Ricciardo thing, actually, he did get a punt from Alonso in that incident, which kind of lurched him into that position in the first place. But it was sort of a separate incident to the Raikkonen thing.
Jeansy, come back at him.
What I was trying to say was, when I was watching Anthony Davidson doing the showing the incident, he's come into the corner, and as he's turned right into the corner, he could have released the wheel to straighten up. But what he's actually done is he's turned a lot more than he needed to, and he's swan-necked round. So what I'm saying is he didn't come out of that corner and go completely straight. He's come out the corner, turned to the right, and kept on going right. If he'd have just opened up the steering, like you should do, he wouldn't have got hit.
Cool. I think we've established whose fault everything was. I mean, that was spectacular. And then Chris is going to wait until the topic is nearly finished to make an additional point, and then Matt's going to do the same thing.
I just wanted to add that Bottas got a 5-second penalty for his incident, and Hülkenberg has a 10-place grid drop for his next one for Monza. So double whammy.
Well, since no one actually ever came to me for this topic, I just wanted to know if you needed to hear from me or not.
I'd love to. Tell us all you know, oh wise trumpets.
Well, I'm just going to ask the fairly obvious question. Has anyone yet blamed Alonso for just simply breaking too soon?
No, I don't think so. Because I think is it the puff of wheel smoke and the screeching brakes and the fact that Hülkenberg said, yeah, I mean, it was me. GNZ, that does it for us, doesn't it?
Yeah, to be fair, with all the chaos that Alonso has caused and the absolute rubbish he's been spouting this weekend, I wish I could blame Alonso for that. I'd love to have to throw something else at Alonso, but no, unfortunately, he didn't break too early. He can break whenever he wants because he's in front.
Well, it was him in the Grosjean incident. It was him in this Hülkenberg incident. How long is he going to go on blaming other people for recklessly running into the back of him? But I tell you what, he flew right up in the air. And Steve, he flew up in the air and he came down right on top of Leclerc's halo. And I know you were anti-halo when we were talking about it last season. I mean, how do you feel about it now?
I've got to admit that I've got to change my point of view. I was totally anti the halo. I believe that the slight danger element in Formula One sort of adds something, you know, the people watching get a little bit out of that. But after seeing what happened to the halo last night on Leclerc's car, I got to say that I'm a staunch supporter of him now. Did anybody get a close look at it? It looked to me like there was so much damage that the actual halo had been cracked. Or was that just paint that had come off the outside of it?
I couldn't say either way, having not seen it for myself, but it did just look like tire marks and paint coming away. This is actually the second time this year I make it that a halo has helped, because there was an F2 incident back in Barcelona with Fukuzumi, I think it was.
Well, hang on a minute. There was one in F1 as well in Canada, wasn't there? There was someone right up against the wall, and the wall hit the halo structure. So we're starting to see, unfortunately, I think in the past, incidents where people were gone, oh, that's kind of close. Now we're seeing the halo interfere. Obviously, the halo is outside of the sphere of the helmet, but the indication that a car has landed on the halo tells you that we're in that territory, aren't we, Chris?
Yeah,
absolutely. And I've seen some comments that the halo wouldn't have made a difference in this instant because of the roll hoop is designed in such a way that, say, if the car goes upside down, the driver's head won't hit the ground. And so if Alonso had, say, hit that roll hoop and gone in a straight diagonal line to the ground, he wouldn't have hit Leclerc's helmet. But, of course, that doesn't take into account tyres flailing around all over the place and lots of heavy bodywork also going rogue as well. So I definitely think this is a case for halo.
I definitely think this is a case where I should just explain it personally. But first of all, I think to answer Steve's question, there's a fairing that most teams run on the halo, and that's probably what you saw that was cracked. And secondly, when you're talking about any device like a halo, you're not talking about specific discrete things. You're talking about a cloud of probability. And the fact that twice now we've seen the halo impacted with structures, be it a car in the air or a wall, simply indicates, I think as Spanners rightly pointed out, that we are into the territory that this was designed for. And yeah, if there was no halo there, Leclerc still might have walked away. We don't know because there was a halo there. But the point is, do we really want to find out when the fix is that straightforward? And as much as from an aesthetic point of view, I still dislike it greatly.
Oh, it's ugly.
It's hard to argue.
Yes.
It's hard to argue against its functionality. It is a very functional device, and it's doing exactly what they designed it to do. And from that, you got to give them kind of 10 out of 10.
Yeah, you're not going to get any argument from me on the aesthetics. The thing looks horrible. And I do really feel bad for the people who swore on their lives they definitely weren't going to watch F1 if the halo came in, because they've missed out on all that action this season, because they wouldn't have lied about that, would they? But, you know, Jeansy, yes, from a functional point of view, how close do people want to get before they admit that the halo is a good idea? How does it really have to be a car landing directly on the roll hoop bit, and then we can use Hawkeye from cricket to do a Hawkeye representation of where the car would have ended up and crushed the head? Like, surely we can see this is a no-brainer now.
Well, briefly on the aesthetics, I've actually stopped noticing it.
Yeah,
I don't even notice it anymore. It's a non-event, a non-function. It's like Cindy Crawford and a mole, isn't it?
You mustn't nice talk 80s, about the mole.
Nice 80s reference there for the podcast. No, you saw from the impact that that halo had on it and the amount of tire that would actually hit that halo. If the halo wasn't there, that would have hit the clerk in the face and the clerk would be dead. That's what would have happened today. So as far as I'm concerned, that is complete cut and shut case.
I have sympathy with what you're saying. It's obviously objective. I'm not sure it's that cut and dry. I think it's closer than you would want it to. But yeah, I mean, I think it is aesthetic. I still can't see the logic of the argument against people are saying that you have to have an element of danger. All right, well, let me take away the Hans device. Let me take away the helmet. People wouldn't want that. This is just the next step in the natural evolution of things getting safer and safer. I don't know. Matt, you're kind of old. Do you need that danger element in F1? I don't. I like the sport of it. I don't need the risk of people being injured for me to enjoy F1.
No, the risk was always something that was tolerated because you wanted to be there. But no driver ever made the argument, I think I'd like the fuel tanks with no dry couplings directly around me in the cockpit rather than behind me in a separate fuel bladder.
Yeah.
No, of course, every driver wants to be safe. And there's no way to be 100% safe when you have that much energy, when you have cars and that much mass going that fast.
As somebody who has seen firsthand drivers getting seriously injured in motorsport, I will sit here and take any opportunity you can offer to make it safer. Because honestly, there's nothing worse. And it's a horrible part of my job when I have to deal with that.
Yes. Let's move on. Fair to say that this race didn't quite spark, and they don't all have to be massive thrillers, do they? But Matt, is there anything that we need to change? Is this just part of the natural order of things? Can we cope with the second half of a race being boring? Or is there something wrong? What could the Mercs have done differently? Here's a question for you. Could the Mercedes have set themselves up for more wheel-to-wheel action, knowing the scenario with the Kimball straight, having seen that scenario play out before? Why did they go for Sector 2 as being their target sector with lots of downforce?
Maybe because they thought it was going to rain during qualifying and they wanted that advantage. Maybe because they thought it might rain during the race. You don't know. They set up that way because, in the best of all worlds, they thought it was the quickest way around the track for them. Ferrari obviously made some different choices, and then you put them together in the race and you see what happens. But for people complaining about this race being boring, it reminds me of the old Saturday Night Live skit called Short Attention Span Theater. Am I the only one who's like, what do you mean boring? We have two teams at the top. Hamilton's lead is being reduced, but Mercedes gain points in the constructors. I mean, we have a season-long race going on here with two teams and two people properly in it for the championship. Be grateful. Be very, very grateful is what I would say to you.
I 100% agree with that, Matt. Very nicely put. Just on Mercedes, I will say that of the two wings that they brought, they ran the lower downforce one. So I guess the designs that they brought were all about the compromise between top end speed and downforce that everybody has to make at this circuit and how best they work with their package. So I don't think it's a simple case of it between two teams run this level of wing and you'll get the same outcome.
Jeansy.
Could it be they're not used to being that much outpowered down the straights? Could it have been a little bit of oversight in the sense that they didn't think, even though the new Ferraris caught them, didn't think it would be that bigger difference. But to be fair, the whole reason for me that the race didn't spark was Bottas wasn't in the race, Kimi wasn't in the race, Danny Ric wasn't in the race. There was loads of talk about it being a two-stop race. I think if those three were actually involved in the race, it might well have been, because there might have been people pushing different strategies.
Okay, but Chris, Mercedes weren't just slower than Ferrari on the main straights. They were slower than quite a few teams. because they'd chosen that higher downforce package.
Yeah, we saw Red Bull were really, really quick in sectors 1 and 3 as well. Not so much in terms of the actual top end speed, I think, but overall in those sectors, they were looking quite good. So I think had they been in the fight properly, had qualifying gone their way a little bit more, you would have seen an even more interesting race. The big thing for me about why this race didn't spark was that, you know, we had these super soft tires supposed to be blistering, and they were a lot on Friday. And then we get to the race and they're actually doing half a race distance. And it's getting a bit tiresome. These easy one-stop races that just nullify the strategy so much. You know, we need to get a way of spicing that up a little bit more.
You say easy one-stop, but I believe none other than a motorsports genius journalist, Mark Hughes, wrote an analysis saying the exact opposite. Based on Friday timings, don't overlook the impact the safety car will have had on the ability of most of the runners to one stop. I think for the majority of the people, I think Max, Lewis, and Vettel, once you took out Raikkonen and Ricciardo, they were only going to be the ones who were really looking to one stop at the start of the race. But the fact of the matter is the safety car was out long enough that it made the window of possibility open for a lot more teams. And that conversely made the race less interesting for the fans, but much better for the teams and the strategists because they prefer it that way.
I'd be surprised that the safety car made such a huge difference because it was quite a short period of, like, you know, only 2 laps. So let's say you get an extra 2 or 3 laps out of the tire life out of that. That's still a comfortable one stopper, because the if you look at the graphics, you know, they're still sitting there and saying the window is, you know, closes on lap 22, and that's halfway through the race.
Well, it's interesting that we get to do this armchair strategy, but I'll tell you where you can do this in real life, and that is, well, real life through a controller, and that is with our sponsor F1 2018. So Chris, you've taken 2018 F1 for a spin. How have you found it?
I've really enjoyed it. The gameplay is really, really cool. I'm liking the new handling model and the aggressive curves that they use now, because they really spit you out. And to look at is gorgeous. The wide shots are fantastic.
What is forcing you to respect track limits? I'm not sure if I'm on board with that.
Oh, I know. I like to abuse them as much as possible. But do you remember the spin that Bottas had in qualifying and qualifying? I did that exact same thing on like my fifth lap in time trial. But it's really, really enjoyable. And the AI are fantastic as well.
That has always been one of my big complaints in F1 games. And I do have a code as well. I just haven't had the time to do it. Basically, in old games of yore, you could just basically park it on an apex and all the AI would just stop and line up behind you.
No, they are quite aggressive. They will go for moves. They're good on defending. If you try and jam it up the inside of them, they're not just going to yield. They're still going to defend their position. Overall, it's really enjoyable.
Well, what's it like if it starts raining? Because Sebastian Vettel in real life, he's quite a bit like the Wicked Witch of the West, you know, like, oh, a small amount of water has fallen on me. I'm melting.
I haven't driven in the wet yet, annoyingly. I was kind of just running some quick Grand Prix to see how it goes. But there's rain forecast for my first career mode race, which is like, come on, ease me in, guys, come on.
You use the racing line anyway, so you're okay. The new improvement that they list is that in F1 2018, it makes it feel like you're right in the action. Revamped visuals make this the most realistic looking F1 game to date. Drive through dense fog, rain, Chris's racing line, and the blazing heat. Feel the raw energy of an F1 car with F1's 2018 improved physics, and feel that suspension go to work.
And the media stuff that they've introduced.
Oh, God. Do you get to, like, set your stall out? Can you be like Magnussen? Can you be like, oh, yeah, kiss my cheek, honey?
Yeah. So there are different types of answers that kind of differ between being sporting and being quite showy-offy. And each team will have a preference for which one they prefer. So teams like Haas will want you to be a bit more tongue-in-cheek, whereas like the works teams will be like, no, you must be super professional and
Robotas.
Not say anything there.
You must be Robotas.
If they kind of ask you about your car, that it's something has to link up between either the power unit or the chassis or the aerodynamics or something. There's no kind of overarching thing of just like, overall things are a bit eh. You have to like identify, you have to call someone out and say, no, this bit is awful.
It's Renault's fault. And yeah. I will give you a call to action if you want to get involved with the F1 2018 game. Of course you do. It's available now on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Go to FormulaOneGame.com or visit your local retailer to pick up a copy and make headlines today. Visit FormulaOneGame.com and get your copy today. Many thanks to Deep Silver for supporting Missed Apex podcast. Let's go to any other business. There were teams apart from Mercedes and Ferrari competing today. What happened to Haas, Matt?
Haas actually did very, very well. They've closed up to within a couple of points of Renault. And Magnussen is just about caught Hulkenberg. So we have like a real battle for the Formula B championship also in full swing. And I would say as well, the New Force India, Racy McRaceface, Race Point Accounting Software Limited concern, did very well for themselves. In a single race, they have now surpassed the yearly total for Williams and are but a single point off of Sauber, that single point being represented by Marcus Ericsson finishing, believe it or not, 10th.
Yeah, it's a good stat there, isn't it? I think Force India, maybe flattering to deceive is not the right word for it, but we're definitely at two circuits in Spa and Monza that has traditionally suited their car very, very well. And I believe that massive upgrade package we were talking about a few shows ago that was worth about half a second as soon as the actual investment came in and the team was out of administration, that would come through and be worth quite a lot. So I think that's played a factor in there as well. So I'd still argue that overall Haas still have like the fourth quickest car. So they may not have bested Force India today, but I think they will do over the remainder of the season after Monza.
If they could come up, scrape the money out from the couch cushions to pay for that fuel additive, they would probably be even more so. And the reason I wanted to talk about it briefly here in any other business, which is any other business, so stop with the side high spanners, is that I'm wondering if this might actually be a backdoor way for manufacturers to claw back control of their power units from the FIA, which is now mandated everybody gets exactly the same modes and same power units, but says nothing about fuel. So if I make an expensive enough fuel that none of my customers can afford it, automatically I have an advantage they'll never get on the other side.
Wait. Obviously that's wrong, because when we broke with Carter talking about the engine mode stories with Grosjean, didn't everybody, including Paul de Resta, say, no, they've always had the same engine modes available. So clearly that's rubbish, Matthew.
No, that is a very technically, forensically correct misreading of what Carter was saying. But what Carter is saying and what they're saying is true. Yeah, the engine has access to all of those modes. Whether or not the Mercedes will give you permission to run them is something that has changed for this season. And we've seen it in the performance of the midfield to a certain extent. And we've seen teams in the midfield saying, wow, this is like remarkable, because before we were being much more controlled, and the manufacturer will always argue entirely for reliability purposes. But that reliability extracts a performance cost, as it's a compromise and a balance. And the manufacturer is now taking less responsibility and allowing these midfield teams more.
Now, remind me, is there a cost limit on how much you can sell a power unit supply for? Because if there is, then maybe there needs to be one for the fuel.
Yeah,
as
we should explore that in a not a race review. But Chris, you were talking about Carlos Sainz, and you felt that he had done very well indeed.
Yeah, he did. I mean, coming up from, you know, back of the grid, last minute engine change after qualifying, to get up to only 12th. But of course, you know, the Renault power has been a bit down, and around the unusual strategy of going from mediums to super soft, I actually thought it was quite an impressive race from him.
Fair enough. But wouldn't Ricardo have finished ahead of him? Kimi also would have, so that's 14th. Alonso would have been fighting him. I don't know. I'm just saying there was a lot of attrition. Jeansy, you've go on, Chris.
No, but there was no way McLaren would have been ahead of Renault.
No, I know. I felt I was overreaching there. I sensed that. Talk to me quickly about the Bottas comeback, Jeansy, because we've kind of got used to saying that it doesn't matter where the cars qualify, even the best cars, if they start at the back, they're going to finish in the top six. So why are you impressed?
He pulled some great moves. I mean, round the outside of Hartley through Rouge was I don't care what car you're in. I don't care how good your car is. If you're in a category that's the same, to go around the outside of Rouge was damn impressive. And especially because he was really wide. It wasn't like he pushed Hartley up against the curb. He was really right wide around the outside of Hartley. So that was actually really impressive. His pace was good. He stayed out of trouble and he pushed and he pushed and he pushed and he pushed. It was a really good comeback, especially after going up the back of Sorokin at the first corner. I was just really impressed with him today, especially because he made a bit of a hash of it in qualifying yesterday with that weird spin through Blanchimont.
So we're coming up towards the podium, and there's been a lot to talk about considering it's a race that everybody said was super boring, and I can't quite keep in my head everything that's happened. If only there was some way to summarize this race in 60 seconds. What do you think, Trumpets?
I think I'd like to give it a try.
Go on, son. Give it everything.
Lights out! Great start, Ocon. Hamilton squeezes Vettel. Hulkenberg launches Alonso. Alonso gets more airtime than McLaren dreamed of, both literally and figuratively. Flying Alonso doll sold separately. Vettel gets Hamilton. Ocon almost gets Vettel. Safety car. Restart. Hamilton locks up. Hamilton pits. Vettel pits. Hamilton held up by Verstappen. Vettel leads. Bottas passes everyone for fourth. Checkers. Ericsson 10th.
Now I'm no master of mathematics. Man, I do time everything in Mississippis. There was only about 20 Mississippis, Matt.
Well, you know, what do you expect? I'm on vacation.
Fair enough. You're on a go slow. Tools down. Mon break. The podium passed off largely without incident, apart from Lewis Hamilton declaring that something funny was going on with that car. Chris, is this proof, what Lewis Hamilton just said, is this proof that Ferrari are definitely, definitely cheating?
Lewis's comments there were a little bit misconstrued and taken in the wrong way, because after that he said, no, we've all got trick stuff on our car. What he meant by trick stuff was not something that was illegal and they were hiding from the FAA, but things that they consider, this is a nice little thing that we have.
All right, then. Let's talk about who did really well at the weekend. And Steve's going to be on the lookout. So give us your awards in the chat room. Go to the chat room by searching Missed Apex Podcast in YouTube. Follow the show at Missed Apex F1. You can follow me as well at Spanners Ready. I really like people following me and interacting with me on Twitter. I do have a new Twitter account to talk about. You could follow at Spanners BBC and see what that's up to. And see if that impresses you at all. Let's talk about the thing of the weekend then. Gene Z, who was your thing of the weekend?
That Bottas move at Eau Rouge. If you're going to overtake somebody at Eau Rouge, it wins everything. There's nothing better than that. It's just phenomenal.
But the thing is, they talk about the Eau Rouge Rodion, and I say it like that to stop people making stupid, already tired jokes. If you go through that complex flat out, they're saying it's easy flat now. You've still got to pick the right line. So if you are then going to go around the outside of that bottom section, you've got to make some big compromises as you go left at Radion, surely.
You have to have some testicular fortitude to make that one work. It was to make that work going around the outside. You've got to have lots of trust in your car and lots of trust in the guy next to you. Would he have done that to Stroll? Probably not.
Excellent. Let's go to Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens to find out who he rated higher than anybody else for this Grand Prix.
Well, my thing of the weekend is actually the post-qualifying press conference when Sebastian asked Esteban, so you're not at Force India next year? And he goes, no, the seat's taken. And he goes, oh, by who? Who do you think? The guy who bought it.
And we had that drawn to our attention, because it was in French, wasn't it, that conversation, by Tarek on Twitter. That's where I found that. I think Three Wheels, Four Legs also reported that. But yeah, Ocon, he's... What else is he going to say? He knows he's basically had his talent stunted for someone with some dollar.
I love it when a driver does not so much gets fed up, but just kind of ignores the rules, because someone will have told him, don't say that, especially at a press conference.
Yeah. But in the end, it might not be Ocon that misses out ultimately. Because, I mean, Stroll is already in F1. So he's not taking an additional seat in F1. He's just moving seats. He's moving up the grid a little. Trumpets.
Yeah, well, are we going to have a special award for people saying things like that? We could also toss up Kubica, who, when asked what else he felt he needed to do to get a Formula One seat, he's like, what do you want me to do? I drive the car once every 3 months and I'm a half second faster than both the race drivers.
Did he say that? That's funny. In his Beyond the Grid interview, he said, yeah, look, I know I'm. Yeah, he basically said the same thing. He said, look, I know I'm quicker. Yeah. I know what I can do. Do you want to give us your Thing of the Weekend award?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the qualifying laps in the third qualifying session, because that was very, very, very exciting. That's the kind of craziness that we all tune in to see.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Jeansy, you've given us your Thing of the Weekend, haven't you? So does that just leave us with Steve, Amy in the chat room?
Well, personally, my Thing of the Week, I've got to give it to the Halo, only because I was so dead set against it that you know, it changed the way I thought, so I'll give it that.
Oh, listen to you are flaky liberal. You're like one of those ex-smokers now who, whenever you walk out of the pub, goes as he wafts everybody's cigarette smoke.
Dr. Vijay Geem in the chat room reckons that Verstappen's move on Ocon was the Thing of the Week because it reminded him so much of their F3 days.
Oh, no, that was interesting, wasn't it? Because, Jeansy, I'll get your comment on this quickly, because Ocon was defending going towards Le Coombe, and then he then resumed his racing line to the left-hand side, and Verstappen almost accidentally, to avoid Ocon coming back, lunged down the inside.
No, he Max threw Ocon a dummy. So as you can see what's happened, as he's come, it's actually interesting when you watch the onboard from Max, he's planned this. He has turned the DRS off really, really early, which is why he's jinked really hard to the right. Ocon's gone to follow him and then instantly jinked back the other way. That's a dummy, and it was superb. I was like, yes, if this works, that's a great move. And he squeezed Ocon just enough on that exit of the corner, and beautiful. It's what should have happened between Lewis and Nico.
See, we can't deny the absolute talent of the amazing Max Verstappen. And why not talk about how good he is when our third highest listenership comes from the Netherlands? Once again, hello to everybody in the Holland.
My surname is Van Gene. I'm Dutch.
Yeah, okay. So keep listening and tell all your friends, etc. Right. Okay, let's go on to bad thing.
Oh, no. You missed the apex.
Oh, no. My good thing. So my Thing of the Weekend, Perez is my boy. I'll defend him. You need to pay more attention to Perez. Okay, Sparkles, who missed the apex for you?
Oh, it's got to be Nico Hülkenberg. I mean, how a driver of his caliber, you know, we expect good things from him. And this was a really silly error he made today.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. That's the low-hanging fruit. Trumpets, who missed the apex for you?
Well, I hate to say it, but going back to qualifying in Q3, I think the Ferrari pit strategy and changing tires and getting fuel into the car could have been run better, because as much as we mentioned Kimi not having enough fuel, there was also Vettel yelling at his mechanics to stop dragging the car around and destroying the diffuser.
Yeah, so basically it was chaos, wasn't it? It just was chaos.
Utter
on that.
Sheer chaos.
Thing is, yeah. you make that plan, and I wondered if anybody was going into that session thinking, well, it might rain, therefore let's fuel up for the whole session. Even though the first lap is on slicks, we'll accept a slower lap on the slicks if we don't have to refuel. Do you think anyone might have done that, Matt?
First India wound up. I missed half of it because I was reading the chat room. But if you're asking about staying on the slicks and taking one less lap, that's what happened to Force India. But I don't think they did it purposely. I think they misjudged the conditions and it worked out favorably for them.
Okay, who have we not done the badness award with? Gene Z?
For me, it's got to be Ocon. He's got to put himself in the shop window. He had the perfect opportunity to lead a Grand Prix by overtaking a four-time world champion and two four-time world champions into one corner. It would have been a spectacular move that I really think he could have pulled off, and he bottled it.
See, I agree.
Absolute bottle job.
I agree, and I think anybody with any common sense or handsomeness whatsoever completely agrees with what you've just said. But I'm just hoping that it hasn't done him any harm, just because people are understanding the context of the championship and him not wanting to lose all that goodwill
I don't think it would have lost him any more points. I think he didn't get a opportunity to gain more points.
Understood.
I think everyone still thinks he's a quality top draw driver.
Agree.
But he could have put himself even higher.
Agree. Steve, who's missed the apex for you, and what are the chat room saying, buddy?
Well, for me personally, I kind of agree with 3D Quick in the chat room. And who missed the? Can I give two awards to miss the apex?
Yeah, you're
last. One to McLaren and one to Williams. Come on, guys, get your act together for God's sake.
I know. And I did cruelly say after qualifying that Carlos Sainz had qualified 15th merely to acclimatise himself to life at McLaren. I mean, I regret that. I understand that is a little bit saucer of milk for spanners. But who else gets the missed apex for you?
Okay, well, Bruce, well, one for McLaren, one for Williams. And in the chat room, many of them are agreeing with Bruce Wayne. And that's Hulkenberg. He may have missed the apex, but he certainly didn't miss Alonso.
Fantastic. Has anybody got an award that is sort of pony-esque?
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Hands up in the panel. Who's got a pony award? Trumpets.
Lance Stroll. I don't know. My father bought Force India, and I guess we'll just have to see what he does. I mean, granted, he's not really complaining, but...
I mean, it's the definition of pony, isn't it? You know, Daddy, I want a F1 team. I already have effectively bought Williams for you. They're completely at your beck and call. No, a better F1 team, Daddy. All right, I think that is enough for this week. Chris Stevens, where can people find you online and your writing?
You can find me at cstevens_journo on Twitter. You can find my written work occasionally on Autosport and Motorsport.com and in Autosport magazine.
Uncle Steve, plug your video company.
Oh, my video company's called FBIT, and we make television commercials and corporate videos and training videos and all of those kind of boring stuff.
And Missed Apex podcast videos.
Yeah.
You do a very good job. We love it. We're very grateful to have you. Gene Z, you are back down to fighting karting weight now, so surely you're going to be back in action soon.
Yeah, I've lost 11 kilos, which I found out is pretty much is the same weight as my 3-year-old daughter, which is actually really crazy when you think about it. No, I'm hoping to be, well, I will be back in the seat on the 23rd of September at Kovkart, racing down at PFI. I have a work event the couple of days before that at PF at Butmore. So send me your times across and let's see how many of you I can try and beat. But it'll probably rain because I think the rain's going to come and never, ever go away again now.
Why is it always raining? No, God, the weather's so bad.
I know. It's not like we had 6 weeks of sunshine. Yeah, you can find me at Alex Van Geen on pretty much everything because I'm boring and don't come up with pseudonyms. So yeah, search me on that. I will be posting about my upcoming racing.
Okay, he should change his Twitter handle to Jeansy Map. But we'll work on that. I've been talking to Alex Van Geen about where we should have an indoor winter end of season review live show and karting event because we enjoyed the summer mid-season one so, so much. Matt Trumpets, where can people catch up with you?
You can catch me at MattPT55 on the Twitters. And of course, always look out for my wonderful wife's work at A Weaver Writes.
And before we go then, let's catch up with Steve Amy to decide who is the winner of this week's
Comment of the Week.
Well, there's been a whole bunch today. The chat room's been going crazy. I've been had a hard time trying to keep up with it. But EMH2212 is in the running. He says that MAP Race Control should give Trumpets a 30-second time penalty for reviewing too fast. Philip Allen says... that no more power units for Merck or Ferrari from now on unless they take penalties.
Yep. That's a very insightful comment. No, it's not particularly a classic COTW winner, but we'll see.
No, but it's a good one. European wants to know, do F1 208 provide the smoking material to produce the fog on the screen in the game? And I'll leave you to figure that one. Of course, Evangelos is there with his comment about Leclerc's Alonso should have left a car's height passing for Leclerc, but I'm going to give it to EMH2212 for his comeback to that, which was Leclerc's car should have ducked Alonso's.
Comment of the Week.
Thanks, guys. Don't rely on me posting this on social media. Go to MissedApexPodcast.com and find out how to subscribe to this podcast on your podcatcher. Make sure you get it delivered to you fresh every week and you don't miss out on the bonus shows like we've just had with Carter and Tech Time with Matt Trumpets and Summers F1. Follow me at Spanners Ready and the show at MissedApexF1. We will see you for the Monza Grand Prix race review. Until then, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. Matt, do you remember a long time ago we were describing what happens when dad is left in charge of the kid and mum goes away? And you described it as the dinner is random and often candy. And that is just how I feel about Jeansy Van Jean and his general performance. If you leave Jeansy on a podcast, he is random and often candy because he's either being brilliantly insightful or he's just throwing the laptop across the room. What happened?
Did I tell
you? Do you know, I'm blaming Chris. I'm blaming Chris.
He is not in your house.
I think we need a special who uses
the racing line, a free copy of the game. That's why I was so angry. It's all Chris's fault.
Because Chris puts work into his audio and doesn't throw his mic across the room.
Tell you this, but...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.